I read David Lee Roth's autobiography like 27 years ago. I need to reread it. It was I really I because I remember really enjoying it and being eye opened and like it actually I feel like it actually like it moved me in a way that I did not expect. And one thing that sticks out in my mind that I remember from the book, he says people never realized he was Jewish, and he said not that he was hiding it, but he said the Lee threw everybody off. David Roth is the most Jewish name ever.
You're right. You're right.
David Lee Roth is, he sounds like he's from Alabama.
So, do you think people wouldn't be on to you if you were Jeffrey Lee Edelstein?
Edelstein is tricky.
Welcome once again to Low Rollers, our 20th episode, which, by the way, we're recording on the day of my 20th wedding anniversary. So milestones all around. I'm Eric Raskin. I'm joined by Jeff Edelstein. Like, subscribe, yada, yada. So, Jeff, what'd you get me for my anniversary? You've known for a solid 10 seconds that it's my anniversary, so no excuses. What did you get me?
I got you a question on since you're putting me on the spot and put you on the spot. What did you get your wife is a better question.
We agreed to get each other nothing and go out to dinner.
Oh, nice. Where
Yeah.
you going anywhere nice? Where you headed?
New restaurant in Yardley called Lagrange or Lagrange, or I don't know how French I need to be in my pronunciation,
Oh,
but
I thought it was a ZZ Top themed restaurant.
yes. It's funny, we were talking about it at the four of us sitting around having dinner the other night, and the restaurant came up, and my son started doing the and then for like the next 10 minutes or so he and I were just like saying everything to that tune. I have some more corn, please pass the peas. And my wife absolutely has never hated me more than she did in that
Sure.
moment.
That sounds
So
fair.
yeah.
Well, that sounds nice.
Yes.
Good. I'm happy for a happy anniversary. 20
Thank
years
you.
is that's quite the
I mean,
milestone.
it's not as big as 20 podcasts, but still.
No. And we're and in the spirit in the spirit of our podcast theme here, we're both going to stand on 20, I think. I think it seems to be a
Good, good call.
we're not splitting this pair.
No.
All right,
Ooh.
listen.
Wow,
Yeah, you like
that can
that? How
be
about
meant in
that?
so many different ways.
Isn't
Great
that
job.
nice? Yeah,
Wow, all right.
you could use that tonight if you want. I don't even need any credit. Yeah. So anyway, we got an interview coming up later with veteran poker journalist Lance Bradley as the World Series of Poker begins. But first, as always, Eric, plenty o news to discuss.
Yeah, and we focus in the news segment this week on the ongoing movement to ban sweepstakes sites. A few different topics under that heading this week. The main one, I think, is VGW, the largest sweeps operator with Chumba, Lucky Land, and Global Poker all under its banner, reportedly exiting New York, which most take as a sign that VGW expects New York to pass its bill to ban sweeps. Louisiana is also advancing toward banning sweeps as its bill passed through a House committee last week. It's headed for the House floor. It already passed in the Senate. And then there's Montana, where a sweeps ban bill has been signed by the governor, and the Social and Promotional Games Association, or SPGA, put together a strongly worded statement. The Montana law doesn't use the word sweepstakes anywhere. It's vague in certain ways, and the SPGA stated, quote, Montana just criminalized everyday digital promotions with a law so broadly written it fails to name what it bans. Jeff, we've talked about how, hey, maybe prediction markets have created such a fuss that sweeps are going back under the radar, but not so much. Sweeps are very much still on the radar. What stands out to you here? I assume you're watching New York more closely than these other states.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, right. I am of the belief that, as New York goes, so goes the rest of the nation when it comes to this stuff for whatever reason. I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, like trying to put some kind of column together. Sweeps, is it gambling? Is it not gambling? Prediction markets, DFS too, blah, blah, blah. You know how I know it's all gambling? Because we talk about it. That's how,
Right.
seriously, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's so ridiculous. So listen, sweeps obviously has been like operating in this like ridiculous gray area. I mean, it's so silly, the idea, trading coins for cash. I still don't even, I mean, it's obviously, it is what it is.
Right.
And so, I mean, if legislatures can get around to banning it, I guess go ahead. I mean, I, the sweeps model is getting, it goes to show you like, I also think the idea of like how iCasino has not caught on in other states, you know, it's stuck at seven or whatever. But sports betting obviously has exploded. Prediction markets, there's no casino yet in a prediction market, right? And so like I feel like that's helping its cause, right? Whereas the sweeps, I mean, the coins to cash thing, I mean, it's such an obvious loophole that is
Right,
being closed
that's what it
here.
is. Yeah, loophole, just like the DFS stuff when it first started, that they were picking apart a law and finding a little loophole in it.
But
And
the difference with DFS is that the argument was that DFS is a game of skill,
right,
right?
that's true.
Which
Right,
it is a
right,
game of skill,
right.
you know? And so like, you know, that loophole should have been closed and, you know, recreated so to make it legal, whereas sweeps casinos are just casinos. I mean, let's who are we kidding?
Right,
But
but
like,
the fact that that loophole that allowed DFS, which I agree is a game of at least partial skill, skill and luck, you know, combined, whatever, long term skill wins out, that law that the loophole was in was originally a law mostly designed to end online poker, which is also a game of skill,
right.
with some luck mixed in. So yeah, it's all kind of messy. You're certainly right that in the end this is all gambling. There is like really no question about it. And you know, whether it's entirely legal or not, is to be determined, I guess. But to claim that sweepstakes casinos are not a form of real money gambling is pretty outrageous.
And on, you know, on top, listen, I mean, again, like, so okay, so some of these states are going to ban sweepstakes casinos, and it's in my mind's eye, this and all this other stuff, your prediction markets and crypto and blah and anything else that's bubbling under the surface. I just picture Wile E. Coyote at a dam, sticking his finger and toes in,
Right, yes.
and it's like, you know, we're fighting such a silly fight, I think, at this point. Like it's you know, gambling. This is a topic that I'm going to be touching on in a column that I'm working on.
Okay, all right.
That gambling is very quickly, right, over the last 10 years, maybe or less, even 5 years, probably post PASPA, gambling has quickly risen from like something that's on the margins to something that's incredibly mainstream. Call it a vice, call it not a vice. Doesn't matter if it's good or bad. It's here. It's like booze. It's like smoking. It's like sex. It's like driving fast. It's like what it, you name it. You name the
Right.
thing that might be bad for you, right? And we don't. We are so far behind the eight ball when it comes to being able to legislate it that like it's over, kind of. Like okay, ban sweeps. Go ahead. There's going to be something else.
Yes, that's why the fingers and toes in the dam is a perfect analogy and perfect image, because yes, you can plug up one thing, something else is going to spring up. Call it whack-a-mole if you prefer that analogy, but yeah, absolutely. I guess what I'm interested to see here with sweep specifically is whether at some point someone moves to introduce a federal law regarding it. Right now, it's all state by state, and I'm certainly not rooting for the federal government to get involved, because they can mostly just screw things up. But at the same time, this patchwork state by state approach to sweepstakes is proving to be kind of a headache. I guess I'm just a little surprised nobody has attempted it yet, that there hasn't been a bill even floated, pushed by some lobbyist on one side or the other. But you know, it's just interesting with prediction markets. We currently have this battle over who has jurisdiction, CFTC federally or the
Right.
states. With sweepstakes, it's all been left to the states so far. I have to assume eventually the federal government will try to get
Maybe
involved.
I don't, I mean, if honestly, I think at this point, if the federal government gets involved, well, it's not happening in this current environment of federal government, like of splinter. Like there, no one, there's not going to be some bipartisan push to like,
Right.
you know, to do anything like this. But like, I think we're just kind of at the point though with gambling that like as I said before, it's here. We should just it's so normalized. Like let's just create like a set of standards for what gambling is and what
Right.
gambling is not. And here's and that's and here you go. You know,
Right.
you want to be a sweepstakes site, you want to have a casino? Here are the rules to having a
Right.
casino online.
Right.
Follow the rules. You could do whatever the hell you want because that's where we're at. You know, it's not, you know, there's not different rules for beer makers in New Jersey. Well, there probably are, but like, you know, we're splitting hairs when it, you know, you want to sell beer. These are the rules you got to follow to sell beer, you know, at a federal level. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I just think, you know,
I mean,
we're looking at gambling now, I think, through 30 different tiny little microscopes, when in fact it's just a fungus all over the earth.
And I say this every time this sort of thing comes up, that it's complicated and it's somewhat annoying, but at least at the same time, putting a positive spin on it for us, it kind of gives us constantly something to cover and talk about, which is the but that's not really worth it for all the headache that's providing publicly. And I mean, for half a second there, New Jersey seemed to be ready to do the right thing and try to regulate sweepstakes, and then they immediately reversed course. The exact same legislator
Legislate. Yeah,
introduced
somebody got in
a
his
bill to
ear.
ban it, right? So
Yeah.
now no one's talking about regulating it. But that's I'm with you that if it's gambling, let's regulate it all. Let's try and put rules around it. I mean, obviously, at the moment, it feels like it's not looking great for sweepstakes operators. The states that are going after them and providing pushback, those states seem to be mostly winning in the short term. But that still leaves plenty of states, obviously,
But
that they're
like,
operating in without any problem. And so obviously they're not, in terms of like being worried about the business model. I had a conversation at the SBC conference with my longtime friend and former colleague, Brett Callup. He was Until recently, he was an exec for Bally's, and then he left and went out on his own a few months ago and is launching a new sweeps site. And he seems perfectly confident about the marketplace and about there being money to be made in sweeps. So I guess whatever states they may lose, the remaining states are still enticing enough.
and I also think there's always going to be like a loophole. Like, what if I start a sweep site today? I give you free coins to play with or whatever, and you can buy a rhinoceros stuffed animal that I'm selling for $500, and I'm going to buy it back from you for $498 if you want. And now I have $498 that I could cash out, like, because I sold you a rhinoceros stuffed animal. I mean, there's always going to be a way around it. So there's the way, I mean, all this talk that we've been doing for 20 episodes, and that everyone in the industry is holding seminars on and having conferences, it's fucking sports betting or casino. The end. Prediction markets, crypto, this, that, sweeps. It's all one, or it's either casino gambling or sports betting, dressed up in whatever, however you want to dress it up. Let's just create common sense. Listen, you think we're going to wake up in 50 years and still going to be this patchwork? Of course not. It's going to be, you want to play casino? You go to casino.com. You want sports bet? Go to sportsbet.com. You're done. That's it. Like, you know, this is crazy at this point. You know, I mean, talk about like dithering over the details. What are we even arguing about? Like, gambling is here, period, full stop. It has been normalized. Right, I talked to my kid, my 16-year-old. I go, "You ever see gambling ads?" He says that's all he sees is gambling for all time, all kinds, for legal, illegal, sweeps, crypto. It's normalized. So let's make it normalized. It is. So let's have common sense about this. Honestly, I know it's my job. I'm exhausted about covering this, that, and the other. It's we're arguing about nothing.
There was a time when we were covering things that followed a familiar pattern of state introduces bill, state passes bill, we cover launch of new product, and we're just so far beyond that, and it's mostly what we're covering is people arguing about what they can or can't offer, and
But again, at
again,
the end,
gives us something to cover.
it's all sports betting or all casino, right? Like, I mean, what? So it's just a question of like, and that's the thing. It's not going away. It's never going away. Like, it has become part of, for good or bad, it is now part of the culture. And again, so all right, so banned sweeps. There's going to be something else. And like, obviously, there's going to be something else. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah,
I kind
what's
of.
the line from Jurassic Park? Nature finds a way.
Well, sure, but I mean that's exactly what I mean. I mean, banning, spending a minute of our breath, not our breath, a politician like banning sweeps. Like, what are we even doing? Like, so all right, so now what's the next? So you're telling me that there's not going to be a way to play like iCasino for real money in, you know, Indiana? Bullshit. Like, so there's going to be a way to, if you want to do it, you'll be able to do it, you know?
Okay.
I'm
All right.
sorry. I went
No.
crazy.
Yeah. It was a good rant, but we do have one other news item to discuss this week. So
Yes.
let's touch on this. This is a wild one. It starts wild and it gets wilder. Kyle Langford, a Republican candidate for governor in California, made a splash earlier this week when he shared on social media that he'd bet $100 on himself at Calshi to become governor, which would earn him a profit of about $1,200 if indeed he wins. Quick whirlwind over whether Kalshi allows this, whether you can bet on yourself or on any market you're directly involved in, cue the Pete Rose comparisons, etc. Ben Lankford was on Twitter yesterday and posted a video where he said there's nothing wrong with being a Nazi, and he was sick of the Nazi shaming. At which point, Dustin Gawker dropped some funny tweets about fading Lankford for governor with every penny he has. Like I said, wild story. We could focus on the gambling aspects as we thought we would until yesterday, or we can focus on the fact that another demented person is running for major office. Jeff, what do you want to focus on here?
Yeah, I think the only people left to run are demented people. I remember I read an Arthur C. Clarke book. I want to say
You,
it might have,
you've
I've
referenced this
referenced
so many
this.
times, but go ahead, finish the
Yeah, I
reference.
think it might have been Songs of a Distant Earth. I don't know. Basically, every citizen of the universe had, well, you from dog catcher to galactic empire, you know, emperor, it was a lottery. And the only people that were banned from the lottery were people that showed a predisposition to being a politician,
Right.
right? And so, I mean, who, you got to be an insane person to want to be a politician these days. And so we have an insane person in California. As far as the Nazi thing goes, you want to be, you know, and listen, no, I mean, no disrespect to any Nazis listening, but, you know, I mean, that's a tough place, tough hill to die on, I think, for a statewide electability. I do think looking back, and, you know, I've done some PR and marketing in my time, I think the Nazis would have been better served if they had done a heart over the I instead of a dot. You know,
Oh,
like
yeah.
Nazis, you know,
Right,
like, you
right.
know, I think that would have helped the
Please
marketing.
don't give him any ideas, Jeff.
Yeah, I guess that's, I hadn't thought about it. Maybe I should buy some no contracts on Langford there.
There, I don't know that
Off,
there's much value left,
yeah,
but
unfortunately.
yeah, I think I'll leave the Nazi stuff aside for now. But just a quick note on the betting stuff that this is where we see the difference between regulated and unregulated. You know, if this is a total hypothetical that requires several leaps, but if Langford bet on himself at DraftKings in a regulated state, there would be proper channels to deal with it, to void the
Right.
bet, to discipline DraftKings for taking it, what have you. So this ends up being sort of an interesting test case for the power of the CFTC to police something that quite clearly damages whatever quote unquote integrity election betting has.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're fading Langford and we're putting hearts over the eyes of Nazis is where we landed,
I
I
just think it's,
guess.
I lit just in ideas. I mean, and I think it might be too late. You know, it's very hard to, you know, to
That's
for a
true.
brand to do a hard pivot like that.
Yeah.
You know, listen, Stranger Things, Nazi shaming. What a fucking asshole.
That is the bottom line here is this Kyle Langford guy seems like a real asshole. If you live in California, please don't vote for him.
Oh
All
my
right.
God.
Are we ready to talk some poker?
Yes, please.
The 56th annual World Series of Poker got underway this week. So we're going to talk some poker on the pod. And we have with us one of the most respected and renowned people in poker media, the former editor-in-chief of Bluff Magazine and Pocket Fives, former VP of Digital for the WPT, now publishing The Overlay on Substack, Lance Bradley. Lance, welcome to Low Rollers.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So before we get too deep into what you're watching for in Vegas over the next 7 weeks, let me start with a general poker media question. The one poker-focused panel at the SBC conference I recently attended in Florida focused on how the poker media has changed. You've been a part of it since, I believe, 2008. I'm sure a lot has changed in 17 years, but what stands out? What's the biggest difference between covering the game now and covering it then?
Part of it is the number of people coming into the poker media space. In 2008, when I was hiring people for Bluff, I was sorting through 200, 300 resumes for five positions for the summer. These were not great paying jobs. They did not have benefits. They were long hours, but they were sort of that foot in the door position, and there was no shortage of good candidates. what's changed is poker isn't the hip college activity that it was back in our day, and you don't have as many people applying. So you're seeing people that are maybe not as focused on the poker side as they are on the media side. You've got young sports writers, sports journalists coming right out of college that are looking for something to do for the summer that are applying for these positions. Or you've got people that are diehard poker fans and aren't media trained. So you're really picking from sort of two distinct groups of people at this point. Covering the game is really still the same. It's about finding the stories amongst the seas and seas of players in these ballrooms. Whether that's the professional poker player who's been interviewed a couple thousand times in his career, or the kindergarten teacher from Pennsylvania who's playing in the Millionaire Maker and has a shot at life-changing money. It's really just such a wide spectrum. So that hasn't changed, and I don't think, at least I hope not, I don't think that'll ever change.
Right. And what you were saying there about how the there were so many people looking for the for these very few low paying jobs way back when sort of speaks to something I'm curious about with the popularity of poker is we sort of we think of it as, oh, poker peaked 15, 20 years ago, and yet they're breaking records at the World Series of Poker main event. So is the popularity of the game still growing and it's just not as mainstream as it used to be? How would you assess the popularity of the game right now?
Yeah, so I think what happened with the poker boom is it sort of set a baseline for people that know how to play poker, meaning they could go to a buddy's home game and not look like an idiot, knowing that a straight loses to a flush.
Wait, what?
Yeah, sorry, I hate to burst your bubble, but
wait
I
till you hear
explain.
about what a full house does, Jeff. Yeah.
So you've got this baseline of people that are, I guess you could qualify them as poker fans or super recreationals. They can play because they know the rules. When COVID came around, everybody needed something to do. And a lot of people gravitated back to online poker, playing $5, $10 tournaments online because it was available, it was easy, and it was something they knew how to do. They didn't have to jump out and learn how to make banana bread. They knew how to play online poker, so they fired up what options they had to play. And that sort of raised the live player baseline a little bit higher. And I think the records you're seeing now is a reflection of that. We are seeing in all, not just the World Series of Poker, but in all live events, we're seeing an adjustment backwards in terms of field sizes, not back to pre-COVID numbers. I think we've managed to overstep that plateau, and now we've got a sort of a little bit higher plateau. But I think, we'll probably talk about this a little bit, but the World Series set a record in the main event last year. I think they might be hard pressed to do that again this year.
I want to touch on the popularity thing for a second. I think if poker had like if poker was one giant business, right, and it had a CEO and a marketing team, I think like going after like the Gen Z population would seem to be like such a great play right now because this is a population that has been, hit by COVID. We all have kids near the same age. Getting them sometimes like to go out, like find it there. Like I saw an article somewhere. I can only, I wish I could remember where, it's popping in my mind, where it's saying, Gen Z needs a third place. And they came up with the concept of a bar. They're so confused. There's such a dearth of opportunity to hang out. And poker, if nothing else, is just a great way to hang out, right? And I just feel like that there, poker like is missing an opportunity, I think, with the younger generation, which and now I'm finally gonna get to my question. You mentioned looking for stories from the poker pros to the kindergarten teacher in, Pennsylvania. Should a kindergarten teacher in Pennsylvania win the World Series this year? Okay. Something like that, like a moneymaker type moment. Do you think that could push poker back like into the mainstream discussion?
It might. I think there's a lot of chatter that since COVID, one of the things that happened in COVID was the Queen's Gambit found its way to Netflix, and people have been clamoring for poker's Queen's Gambit or Drive to Survive moment type show. Something like that would certainly help. I know there's a few people that are dabbling in it. I believe there's a Stu Unger movie being made about his life, which being made by a reputable studio. So maybe that'll help you get that some mainstream attention. But the World Series, when it boomed, was on ESPN. It's not anymore. It's on CBS Sports and PokerGo, and it's a little bit different beast. It's not as hip. It's not as cool. I mean, when Ryan Reese won the World Series of Poker main event, it was 4 in the morning in Vegas, and Bill Simmons was awake and tweeting about the kid wearing the Charles or the Megatron Detroit Lions jersey. That might have been peak main event pop culture crossover moment. We can get back to that. I think If you get the right story, like you're alluding to with the kindergarten teacher, if you get the right story in the main event and then you've got a vehicle behind that story, then yes. But the problem is, I don't know if anybody's taking ownership of that vehicle.
Right.
And that's the challenge we're going to have if we want to find a another opportunity to sort of push the game even higher into the mainstream zeitgeist.
All right, and then the same thing along those lines that people always talk about as the thing that could push it if this person won is the narrative of what if a woman won or at least made the final table. I guess let's look at it this way. Which is the bigger driver engine for poker? If a woman makes the final table or if a celebrity makes the final table? Are people overstating the woman thing slightly? If you could have, say, Jason Alexander makes the final table, is that a bigger deal?
If you had asked me 2 years ago if I thought a woman making the final table would provide sort of that secondary boom, I probably would have said no. I think the environment we're in now with the Caitlin Clarks, the Paige Buckers, the changing way that we view women's sports, I think there's enough women's sports media outlets, places like The Gist, which is a Canadian group, but they cover sports from a woman's perspective. I think you've got a lot of outlets like that that would be that vehicle behind that story. And it would, I mean, in terms of history-making moments in poker, that would be one of probably the top two or three if a woman won the main event. So, we saw it last year when Chrissy Foxen made such a deep run. We were all kind of like holding our breath, like, hey, is this going to be it? Because we hit two home runs there. One, we get a woman winning the main event. And two, she happens to be one of the top two or three female players and probably one of the top 15 or 20 tournament players in the world. So we get two kinds of massive narratives to push behind it. I definitely think a woman winning in 2025 would be a big boom for poker.
And you were hinting earlier at your thoughts on the chance of breaking the record in the main event this year and making pretty clear that you don't think it's going to happen. Is it the international travel factor is the big thing that you think makes it such a long shot?
Yeah, I think so. I wrote about this in the Substack this week because if poker players are good at one thing, it's giving into FOMO. And so I think, there is a lot of chatter in the poker world, at least in the month leading up to the start of the World Series, that the travel requirements under the Trump administration are a little bit muddy. No one can seem to get a good answer. Do I need to be fingerprinted? Do I need a passport that's good for a year? What happens if I get detained because I've got a marijuana possession criminal record from 2005 kind of thing. So there's those people that are going to wait it out. And I think they might skip June events. They might skip the preliminary stuff. I think as you get closer to the main event, people are going to be like, this is the one I just can't miss. Every year I've got to play this thing. So I think it's going to get a good number. I don't think we're going to see like 20% drop. I just think that the challenge is still going to be there to reach that sort of 10,113, I think is the number to break a record. I think it's going to be hard pressed to get there.
This is an unfair question because it's so not new to you. But for someone who's never been to the World Series or like such a massive event, what in my mind I picture it as the hearing chips click and all the chatter and people stay. What is it really like? What's the day to day on the floor of the World Series like, for someone who's getting it for the first time?
Yeah, so it's this year it's 51 days,
Right.
and it is 12 to 16 hours a day of those chips clattering away. But the truth about that noise is you will come to love it. I actually have a 2.5 hour recording of the floor from the 2022 main event that a friend made for me. I treat it as my white noise sometimes when I'm on
Oh,
the
that's so
road.
cool.
It is busy and it is hectic and it is, I was describing to somebody the other day. I'm like, imagine if the Super Bowl was every day for 7 weeks. Because for the people that are in a particular event, that could be their Super Bowl. That's their one event that they're playing. So their excitement is at an all-time high. As they get deeper in the event, they've got more excitement. Their friends are on the rail. So every event sort of has a level of hype to it that's maybe a little bit different from any other poker tournament on the calendar throughout the year. Obviously, the main event is a different beast. It's that one's 12, 13, 14 days of madness. And even as you get down to the final table, it doesn't seem to get quiet in that room. In fact, it gets louder with just nine players left. So it is a it's something to see. I think if you're in Vegas at all during June and July, I recommend just walking over to Horseshoe or Paris and walking around and experiencing it. It's got a little bit of a festival feel to it, and it's got a little bit of a club that maybe you've walked into feel that you've never been to before.
Now, how long are you going to spend there?
I'm only making a short trip out this year for the main event, so that's
Right.
only going to be probably a week for me. But I've done the full 7 week haul before,
Wow.
living out of a hotel room and covering it. But this year I'm a little bit fortunate. I've only got the sort of 1 week trip planned.
Going back to the time that you did it for the 7 weeks, what when it's over, like I can't even imagine like the relief slash now what slash like as a, you know as a working journalist myself, you know, like to cover something for, I can't imagine covering something for 7 weeks.
It's yeah, coming home is wild. My wife hates it because I am a zombie for a good week. It's, I mean, you're adjusting to the fact that, like, you know, she's not pumping oxygen into my house like they were to the ballrooms to keep people alert. So I'm dealing with that. I'm dealing with the fact that I can sit down for more than an hour at a time, and I'm sitting on a couch and I'm falling asleep watching a movie, or
Right.
I'm sleeping till noon every day. It is for the players, I think it's one thing they've got. Sort of a different type of exhaustion, but for the media that cover it and do the full 7 weeks, it is an exhausting haul, but it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And wasn't there one year where for those 7 weeks you for a prop bet wore the same shirt every day for those 7 weeks? Is that right?
Yeah, it sort of it overlapped two World Series. It was an entire year, and it happened to it was on day one of her. No, it wasn't day one. It was day two or day three of the main event 1 year, and I had to wear the shirt for an entire year. And so the next year, I think I made it through 5.5 weeks of preliminary events wearing it, and then finally got to take it off during the main.
Do you still have the shirt, or did it go in the trash?
No, I get asked this all the time. I couldn't bring myself to throw it out. I
No.
also couldn't possibly put it on again.
Fair enough. All right, last question, and this is another topic you hit on in your Substack, but actually, two-part question. Will Phil Hellmuth play the main event, and do you care?
So he actually announced yesterday at the 25K fantasy draft that he was playing the main event.
Oh, okay, I missed that. All right.
Had there been a bet offered the day that he said he was boycotting or sitting out or whatever you call it, I would have mortgaged the house, sold everything inside of it, and lived in my car to wager on Phil Hellmuth played the main event. I totally get what his point is, that the days are too long and you need a break after day five or day six. But the reality is that Phil doesn't treat the main event as an event he's playing to win. Phil has for 12, 15 years now utilized the stage that is the main event to grab a little bit of spotlight and shine it on himself with his entrances and some of his antics. So my feeling is, based on what he announced yesterday, so he put out a video on Twitter and said, I'm going to leave it up to the fans and let them vote. Obviously, the fans at an alarmingly high rate voted yes. I think it was 85% were yes for him to play. He said, I'm going to stick to it, but the condition is that I will sit out the 2026 WSOP main event if they don't make that change. Which leads me to believe that maybe they've already decided to make that change and Phil's going to get credit for it.
Ah, okay.
As for do I care? No, because I knew he was going to play.
Right. But after, all these years of covering it, you haven't completely tired of the Phil Hellmuth experience.
I wish he would dial it down a little bit, but
Yeah.
I do understand why the TV production and the organizers allow it and like it.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Lance. I will direct everyone to theoverlay.substack.com to read all your stuff now and throughout the series. It is free for now, correct?
It is. It's free for now.
Okay. Emphasis on the for now.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the pod, Lance. Always great catching up with you.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Our thanks again to Lance. I really enjoyed that conversation, and I do recommend his Substack, The Overlay. So, Jeff, we're about 2 months into the baseball season, and I just want to give a quick shout out to our podcast guest right before the season began, Brad Feinberg. He recommended a whole bunch of futures on the pod, and I picked five of them to bet. Here's what I have money on, all thanks to Brad. I would never have thought to bet any of these on my own. Orioles under 87.5
Oh,
wins.
cash it.
Yeah, they're 19-36. That one is a
Yeah.
lock already. Red Sox to make the playoffs. That one isn't looking great. They're 4 games under 500. I'd call it suboptimal, but still live.
They're unlucky. They're one run. I should have saw yesterday. Their
Right.
games,
Their
it's
record in one run games.
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they'll come around.
Yeah, but whether they can still make the playoffs when they're several games out right now, we'll see. They're definitely an underdog.
Yeah.
Braves under 93 and a half wins. They're 25-28. That one's almost as much of a lock as
Yep.
the Orioles. Reds over 78 and a half wins. They are 28-29. So that one is basically right on track. They're on pace for 79 and a half. They'd go
Yeah.
over by one. So tracking toward going 3-1 on these four bets, which is solid. Absolute worst, I'll go 2-2. But then here's the one I'm enjoying most. Brad gave us Mariners closer Andrés Muñoz at 28-1 to lead the league in saves. He was still at that number, 28-1 when I bet him, and he is currently tied for the league lead in saves at 17. And I'm here checking Mariners scores every night. I'll look. It's the fifth
That's
inning.
fun.
They're up by two. Great. All right, keep the lead, but don't go up by five or more and
Right.
take him out of save range. It's so stupid, but I'm really enjoying it. It gives me something to root for every night, especially since my one best ball team is beyond dead in last place, the worst MLB best ball team ever assembled. So thank God for Andrés Muñoz.
That's actually a pretty fun sweat. It's
Yeah.
I hate betting like season long stuff because just the idea, because I'm never putting a lot of money into it, and I don't know. It seems like a long wait, but that's fun. When you're in it's fun,
Right,
right?
If he had three saves right now, or if he
Right.
had gotten out to 10 and then gotten an injury that was going to knock him out for 3 weeks or whatever, then
Sure.
it's dead. But as of now, it looks like I've got a full season sweat ahead of me.
That's fun. That's good stuff. All right, listen, all this poker talk today, which we haven't talked a lot of poker in this pod, just got me really re reminiscing. Me and my friends, like our home game went on for years, from high school through college through young adult. Probably a good 10 years there, we had at least a game a week. Like there was always a game. There was like a solid, 10 to 12 of us. So there was always like six or seven guys around for a poker game. It was fun, I was pretty good too. I'd walk out of there with 10, 20, 30 bucks usually, So I thought I'd enter a tournament in AC, when the poker boom like hit. So I did. I got busted out quicker than the time it takes to finish the sentence. It was horrible. I was so overwhelmed. I knew that poker was not for me, competitive poker. I have like no chill. I'm chillless. Like I'm sure I'm an open book. But I do miss the home games, and I guess I could drum up one now if I really want. Do we play like once a year? We try to get together, but I don't know. It's a lot. But I'll tell like I said in the interview with Lance, I do think that like poker amongst the youth is ripe for a comeback. I mean, it's a great hang, I mean, really, there should be like outreach, there should be like poker outreach, like where we encourage children to play poker. I mean, I'd rather have my kid play poker than like being out like smoking weed or whatever, So yeah, poker as a savior of American culture. That's my workshop. I'm workshopping this. I have some hashing out to do. I got to, there's some T's to cross, I's to dot on this, but I like
Heart
it.
hearts to put over eyes, perhaps.
Hearts to put over eyes, yeah. But yeah, I think poker can be the savior of our youth. That's my working thesis.
Okay.
I'm working on it. Hopefully by next week I'll have it fleshed out. And until then, we are low rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.